Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to Total Information AM. I'm Megan Lynch. The average size of the American family has shrunk. In the 70s, it wasn't unusual for a family to have four or more children. Now that's much more rare. A recent Gallup poll found that 44% of families think two children is best. Only 2% want five or more kids. Our next guest determined to take an in-depth look at that group. Her name is Catherine Pakolik. She is an associate professor at the Catholic University of America and author of Hannah's Children, The Women Quietly Defying the Birth Dearth. And we have to mention that you are also a mother to eight, plus you have six stepchildren.
Yes.
Okay. So you are part of this group. And I think what's so interesting about this is that you focused on college-educated women. Why this group?
I did because when we look at the demographics around the country and around the world, that's where it looks like the crunches. It looks like the more education people get, the smaller the family sizes. And, you know, as a scholar and a researcher and somebody who's interfacing with the policy world, you know, one dark conclusion you could reach is like, well, maybe women getting educated isn't good for, you know, the demographic future. I don't think that's the story, what I needed to do is talk to people who had college educations, right? Yeah.
And you talked to over 50 women, and I'm sure mm-hmm. the reasons varied, you know, but what was maybe the overarching why of, you know, these families wanting a large number of children?
Yeah. So the overarching why, if I were to sum it up, was having discovered some really powerful reason to see children as blessings. You know, so it would be natural to think like, oh, that came from a religious faith or a place of religious faith. And it did for many of them, in not for everybody. In some cases, these are people who had their first or second and just sort of fell in love with having babies. But really it's a demand story. And that's an econ term, right? But it means they really wanted these children. They really wanted them.
It does, I'm sure, change your lifestyle quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, the more you add. And I wonder for these families, because big families are not the norm today, what kind of social stigma do some of these women face?
Yeah. So I recorded some of those stories. In fact, it was a great icebreaker. I didn't interview people I already knew, you know, so walking into their living rooms and I said, you know, what's the craziest comment you've received about your family size in public? And some of them were charming, but some of them were a little bit more negative, right? People saying you should be ashamed of yourself or you're doing a terrible thing for the planet, that kind of thing. So that's the social stigma that you talked about. But overall, the lifestyle challenges, that was exactly what I was after. I was really after kind of like, what does that mean? And how does it work out? And a really interesting message, something that I heard repeated from a lot of people was sort of, it doesn't get harder forever. That there's a kind of a peak, like three kids is about the hardest number of kids to have. And so five isn't five times as hard as one, right? And that's why, because the kids grow up and they begin to help and you get better at it. There's actually a thing called the skill of mothering. And, you know, like, you know, you change, your capacity grows, like in any profession or any type of work that you do, right? You look back and you think what you can do now is not, you know, it's so much bigger and more impressive than what you could do when you started. I know that's true of my teaching career, right? I'm a much better teacher today, but mothering is like that too. You can get a lot better at it. So in terms of those lifestyle challenges you mentioned, that was a really interesting feature of the interviews.
How have we gone in the society from, you know, in the past century, from families mm-hmm. being large, in some cases for very practical reasons, for example, for farmers or, you know, just because the death rate was so high for children,
right.
You know, to then this not being the norm anymore of having these large families.
Right. Well, I think that the big story for the last century is really I would call it the horse race between career and family. Part of what I wanted to investigate is that necessary? Is it necessary that people have to choose, right? Because what it looks like now is it looks like people have to choose. As you said, in the, you know, centuries before that, that wasn't on the table, that kind of horse race. And that was made possible by, you know, we could say like the reproductive control of the 20th century. So, you know, basically it's about 1960, it becomes possible to, you know, pursue college, a higher education, and not postpone marriage. And so that's the thing, this horse race between career and family. But one of the things that we haven't done in the looking back is kind of question the timeline. So what happens for women, if you want to pursue a career or higher education, is you're really kind of crowding out the years when it would be normal to have children, or easier for your body to have children, right? And so we're just going to school and doing all those things at the same, on the same time frame as our husbands and our male partners. And that doesn't really look like it's been great for forming families. So we do know that across the country, most women report maybe wanting an extra kid more than they have, which, you know, it's hard to know what to do with that kind of information, but it doesn't look like people are totally satisfied with the families that they've been able to have. They may be okay with the trade-offs that they faced. I mean, the choices they made given the trade-offs, but it's really worth asking if people have to make such sad trade, like face such sad trade-offs. And so I think this is a great time that people are sort of stopping to ask that question. Yeah.
When we look at the demographics, mm-hmm. you know, and some of the realities, maybe looking a decade or two down the road of some of these lower birth rates, what are, you know, some of the impacts of that?
Yeah. It could be sobering. And that's the reason why countries are trying to think what they could do to fix this. I mean, the number one thing would be economics, right? I mean, you need to have people to fill the roles that produce goods and services. So you definitely are going to be looking at economic contraction and stagnation, which lots of countries are already experiencing. And that is probably a feature of the demographics, where we were not the first country to experience this slowdown of births, but we're sort of starting to hit us. I know at the college level, right? I teach at college, and we talk about the demographic cliff that colleges are facing in the next, right, 2 years, this really smaller wave of college students. So all kinds of industries will have to adjust, and then the whole economy will slow down. Then there's political tensions, because we will not be able to pay for the government programs that we're used to having. So people talk about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and all these sorts of things that we pay for out of the largesse of having a pretty large tax base. We will not be able to keep affording those things, and whatever that will do to our political scene. But I'd like to raise one more thing, which is, you know, smaller and smaller family sizes mean people growing up with fewer brothers and sisters and fewer cousins and fewer aunts and uncles. And that has something to say about our current sort of mental health crisis, right? And it's like loneliness and depression and anxiety. These things are all linked to having fewer people in your life that love you, right? So all things being equal for a given population size, smaller family sizes means fewer family ties. So I think that's pretty devastating too.
Is this always a purposeful choice for these families that they set out and they think, I'm going to have this number of kids, mm-hmm. or is it just something that evolves for these couples?
Yeah, that's a great question. We looked for people who would use the language of purpose in the sense that they wouldn't have said, my family size was accidental, right? So we didn't want people who accidentally had five. Now it turned out it's very difficult to have five accidentally. So that wasn't too hard. But what the first question I asked them was, when you got married, when you met each other, did you know you wanted to have five or seven or 10 children? And in general, the answer was a very solid no. It was a very solid no. And so it was some kind of tale of, you know, being, starting out life with a kind of idealism, like we'd like to welcome children. We maybe have our first or our second. And that's how it was for me. And then just kind of seeing like, wow, I really enjoy this baby. And then looking for ways to press into a lifestyle which has flexibility. And so there were as many stories about that kind of flexibility as there were women in the sample. So yeah, it was a kind of combination, but it was really one at a time. It's one at a time. And many of them knew other people who'd done this before, right? And that helps, right? Gives you a sense of what's possible. And many of them were supported by mentors in their church communities and that kind of thing. So yeah, there may be one or two interviews were with women who said, yeah, I just knew I wanted 10. So, but it was not common. Yeah.
What would these college educated women want the rest of society to know about their choice?
I think the language of joy came up a lot, but not in a, I would want to say like a hidden joy. This is why I use the language of quietly in my book title. What struck me is that there were all these hidden joys that they talked about. They weren't cheaply won, right? This is a hard lifestyle, but they weren't here to say, you know, it was just all the hardship. And they weren't tales of people who said, well, I'm doing all these hardships. I really believe in it, but there's nothing else in it for me. So there were a lot of really, you know, they're really inspiring and deep descriptions. They evade simple summaries, descriptions of joy and reward and fulfillment. And oftentimes those experiences of joy and fulfillment that women talked about were the reasons why they continued having children, right? So they maybe set out to have a few and they were excited about building a family, but then they kind of pressed into this space where they said, wow, like this is something I never knew about. And those descriptions, I think, were what kept them going.
Yeah. What do you hope readers take away from this?
I definitely think I hope readers take away a vision of something that maybe they never thought about or never heard before, a description of something that's possible. So many of the women hadn't given up careers or sort of normal things that they might have done in their life, but they had found spouses or partners who, like them, wanted to prioritize children. And I think that's a message that young women, I mean, certainly when I was coming up in college, it's not a, I looked around and I didn't see that anyplace. And so, you know, I certainly knew what kinds of things I wanted to do with my professional work, but I didn't see that. So I really hope that the book descriptions in these, they're such nice stories. I really hope people will take away a sense of like things that are possible that we didn't know were possible. Yeah.
Catherine, thank you so much. Appreciate
you. You're welcome. Absolutely.
That is Catherine Pakalik. She is an associate professor with the Catholic University of America, and her book is Hannah's Children, The Women Quietly Defying the Birth Dearth.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.